Thank you for attending session 228 titled Where We Stand, Ordained Women Documentary. Before we begin, we ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. It is the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep in mind when engaging in the Q&A portion of the session following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by those guidelines should refrain from commenting and will be asked to leave should they become disruptive. The session is being recorded and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Take advantage of our symposium special by subscribing to Sunstone Magazine, 7 issues for the price of 6 at the registration desk as well. Consider also purchasing Skullcandy official headphones customized just for Sunstone. Your support goes directly to keeping Symposium and 4 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. Don't forget to check out the bookstore in the ballroom hosted by Benchmark Books. Consider purchasing a book or two to support Mormon studies and scholars. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after the session, you clear the room and sit outside so other presentations can begin preparation for the next session. Where We Stand is a documentary film about a controversial group of Mormon feminists fighting for women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The film follows Abby Hansen, a stay-at-home mom turned vocal advocate for ordained women, as she navigates the repercussions of her unpopular activism against her church in her predominantly Mormon suburb. The film is also the coming-of-age story of ordained women as an organization itself, from a humble website to an internationally recognized activist group. Presenters after the film will speak in the following order. Christine Stackus' films have played at festivals internationally, including Hot Ducks International, Seattle International, and Friendline. She holds an MFA in documentary film and video from Stanford University and a BA in cultural anthropology from New York University. Kate Kelly is the founder of Ordained Women and a human rights attorney. She currently works at the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah as their strategic advocacy and policy counsel. Abby Hansen grew up in Davis County, Utah, graduated from UOU, and has lived in Lehigh ever since. She's a seasoned Army wife, a landlord, and a stay-at-home mom to 3 kids. We will listen now from Bernice Roberts, who will give a brief introduction to Ordained Women.
Sure.
Good morning, y'all.
Good morning.
As Sammy said, I'm Brendis Roberts. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as the chair of the Executive Board of Ordained Women. I am a convert to the church, so my path has been very, very interesting. I joined the church in 2013. I discovered Ordained Women in 2014, got involved with Ordained Women in 2014, became chair of the executive board in 2015. So I kind of do things quickly, you know, there's no need to mess around. I love the fact that the description talks about it as a controversial movement. I'm sure that's what the church thinks about it, but when you think about what we're basically asking for is just basic equality. And why that should ever be controversial is beyond me. I grew up in the South. I grew up when there were still signs that told me which bathroom I could go to and which water fountain I could drink from. And seeing that kind of thing out in the world hurts a lot, but it hurts even more when you're in your house of faith and when you're treated in your house of faith as a second-class citizen. That is why I am in Ordained Women. That is why no matter what the church does to me, I will still be committed to Ordained Women. And that is why I encourage each of you, if you have not stepped over that line, to be one of our supporters, to put up a profile, to join with us in actions, to join with us. We're not seeking anything radical or crazy or unheard of, but we're seeking to have all of us as God's children to be treated equally as God's children. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're coming. we need about two more minutes, so we're hooking up things to make sure we get good audio and sound for you. Kate, can you... Hi, I'm Joanna. Nice to meet you. Kate, can you come up and give a little introduction about how Christine maybe... I know, I'm putting you on the spot. Deal with it. about how Christine approached you.
Sure.
And who Christine is.
Okay.
All right, I'll just entertain you until they figure out the movie. So Christine is not a Mormon. She was actually raised Catholic, and she found out about ordained women, I think, through one of the stories online, so probably in the New York Times or something. And there was something about the story that really spoke to her. She is very interested in social justice and movement building, and so she decided to kind of investigate further, find out a little bit more, and she decided to focus, although my story was very prominent in the news and that's how she found out about ordained women, she is really committed to finding out more about people who are part of movements and who who join it at a different point, who aren't necessarily the figureheads or the leaders. And so she asked about different people who might be interesting to focus on or to film. And one of the people that we suggested was Abby. And Abby is awesome. I'm glad you're going to get to hear from her after seeing the piece. But because Abby had a really interesting journey in joining up with us. And so that's kind of what the film goes through, is the process of someone finding out about something, deciding to speak up, joining the movement, and then how that impacts their life. And so I think it's a really good slice. Abby is a really, representative of the group in many ways and kind of the journeys that we take. So, yeah, I guess we're ready. So enjoy the piece.
We will now listen from Christine, Kate, and Abby, and then we'll have time for questions.
Christine's actually not here, so. I'm not sure. Okay. I have no idea. So we'll just go with us for now. Sorry, that's disappointing. So I don't have anything to say necessarily. Questions? Yeah, does anyone have any questions?
Wait, I'll say something.
Okay.
I haven't watched that movie since last summer because when she finished it, because it's weird to watch yourself, but so I haven't watched it again. And I just read the part that said, like, Abby got a new bishop, who's now been my bishop like 2.5, 3 years, but got a new bishop, and she's no longer being considered for excommunication. I will say, he did something worse. He put me in charge of Cub Scouts. And I was like, wait a minute, I could be excommunicated right now. We could go get a glass of wine, Kate, instead. What am I doing on Sunday mornings? Anyways, there you go. That's all.
Does anyone have any questions?
This film available online somewhere?
It's still going through the festival circuit, and so I think after that it probably will be. I'm not sure. It does have a website where we stand, and it's on Facebook, so I'm not sure. I know that it's still screening at a couple festivals. The next one is the United Nations Human Rights Film Festival in California. So it's being screened at a lot of different places.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I just got a BAFTA award. From the British Film Society. People are interested.
In the documentary didn't mention how you were received by the community. I mean, it's more how did the church receive you, but how did the community react, and maybe to both of you, to some of your thoughts and your advocacy?
Can you repeat the question?
So the question is, the film focused on how the church responded to our advocacy, but how did the community around us respond?
Okay, well, I'll go first. There has been a difference. Obviously, not everyone responded the same way. I've been in the same ward for 13 years now, and I've been the same ward as my state president, and, I knew everyone in the ward and lots of people in the stake, and I was very, very centered, in like a Utah Utah County, very Mormon neighborhood ward community, things like that. Very tight kit. And like, I don't know, like 90% of the people that I interact with are like Orthodox Mormon. All my friends are Mormon moms. I mean, like, that's just like my world and stuff. So when my profile came out, everyone was shocked. It was like, I don't know, like, how to compare. Like, I think I was the most exciting, like, gossip to happen to my ward, like, of the decade. It would be like the bishop's wife and the second counselor, like, elope, you know, like, leave, like, it would be like something that, like, what? Like, Abby Hansen put up an ordained woman profile? Like, it was a big deal, right? So anyways, after things settled down a little bit and, like, the shock wore off and they realized it wasn't a hoax, like, I really did, there's a small percentage of people who have kind of dug in their heels and I have lost friendship with, like the state president's wife. I don't, she and I used to be friends. I used to go to institute classes with his wife. And we don't really talk anymore. Actually, she saw the trailer and turned me into her husband, who had the bishop call me in when he saw the trailer for this movie. Like, I don't feel like we're mortal enemies, but I don't think we're gonna go to institute together anymore. So I have some people like that. Most people have stayed my friends and love me and have just decided Abby's a little crazy, but we love her. And I have seen some big changes. Like, now we're, you know, working on 3 years. This fall, right? This fall, I think, will be 3 years since I put my profile up and since the first action. And I was just last month at a barbecue with my Army wife friends, and one of them is a Relief Society president in American Fork. And we sat down and we talked, and she was saying, you know, I was sitting in ward council and we're planning sacrament meetings, and I looked, and I think it's just something her ward does, but every month they have a high councilman and a member of the bishopric speak. And she was telling me, like, excited to tell me, she's like, and I said, as soon as women came to, because women came to ward councils to help, they started to help planning sacrament meeting just within the last, maybe a year ago it started. So it's kind of a new thing that women, for the first time ever, are being involved in planning sacrament meeting because they're including the ward council instead of just the bishopric. Okay, sorry, getting to my point. She said, like, excited to me, she's like, so the first thing I did was point out, do you realize that that is 25% of our sacrament meetings that will never have a female voice in it? And she said that they looked at her like, oh, we've never thought of that. She's like, we need to change that. And you could tell she was telling me because she's my friend and we love each other and she's a very Orthodox Mormon, but she's changed some of her thinking. Like, I don't think she would have thought of that a few years ago, but like talking to I'm using this as an example, my group of Army wife friends, my husband's military is deployed multiple times, and I have this very close group of Army wife friends who I just love. And all of them, you know, were kind of like, whoa, Abby's gone crazy, but they still love me, right? And we've had discussions where they've said things to me, other ones, and it's like six of us, you know, said, you know, you've made me think about things I never thought about before. You've changed the way I see certain things, you know. They aren't going to be like putting up an ordained woman profile, but like they see things different. So I have mostly, to actually answer your question, instead of go on a tangent, I have mostly felt love from my community and friends. And when Kate was excommunicated and I sobbed on my floor for a few days, that was like a very traumatic time for me. The young women's president across the street from me did a heart attack on my garage. And the neighbors right next door brought me flowers. Like, he brought over flowers to say, we heard you were having a hard time and we love you. Like, Mormons are good people. Like, they really are. And there's no getting around that. Even if Mormon culture and doctrine can just make you want to literally tear your hair out, like, Mormons are good people. So 90% of my friends are the same. 10% of them, I guess we don't go to institute anymore, me and state president's wife.
Would you say you have new friends?
Oh, yeah, I have new friends. There's like this whole community that I had no idea existed, which is probably the community that like comes to Sunstone-ish people. I had no idea you guys existed, and you're awesome. And I found lots of you now.
It's interesting because the launch of Ordained Women, that little thing where I joked about not having any kids, was here in this room. So it's actually in this very room, so to speak, that we launched Ordained Women in 2013. So one thing that isn't in the film, which I thought was really funny, was Abby was, I mean, they underestimated how much of a difficult time she was having with her bishop. She was having a really difficult time, and he was being very, like, excessively obsessed with the issue and would, you know, research it for hours and talk to her for hours and then call her back in and say, like, we need to have another 3-hour meeting and da-da-da-da. And it was really focused on me at a certain point about how evil I was and all these things. So, and she was feeling really lonely. So a big group of us, ordained women, people, decided to go to sacrament meeting with Abby. And so we all went, I think we sat in the front row.
Like the
yeah. And so we like all filed in wearing purple just to go, just to show him like who we were. And we sang the hymns and, you know, we just sat there and kind of just stood with Abby. And then afterwards I went up and introduced myself to him. And it was this like moment where it was like, oh my goodness, this person that I've been talking so much about and researching so much about is like here.
As a real person, like, he didn't seem to think or get that I actually knew Kate. He was like, well, does this Kate woman? I'm like, okay, Kate. Her name is Kate Weiss.
And so, yeah, my parents also went and I introduced him. I'm like, I'm a person and I have a family and whatnot. So, yeah, that was a really interesting. That was fun. Just to show solidarity. I think, and for me, I have a very supportive immediate family, but I would say my extended family has had problems with ordained women and more Orthodox people in my family. We don't really have much contact with them anymore. I had to unfriend my grandmother from Facebook for the sake of our relationship. And now I work at Planned Parenthood, so pretty much all I post about is abortion. So I think that was a good decision in the long run. But yeah, I think I've definitely lost some friends, but I've also gained, like Abby said, a lot of very important relationships. I think this, again, in this very room.
Like Satan?
Yeah. Satan is my homeboy. So don't tweet that. In this room, I've met a lot of the original people who helped form Ordained Women, including Mark Barnes, who's here. He came super early that day. He was like 45 minutes early. I'm like, who comes that early? And so I knew Mark was going to be a shower-upper from the very beginning. And a lot of other folks. So I think we have all lost, you know, relationships and friends, but also gained something much bigger, which is a bigger community, but also self-respect. I saw some hands. Yeah.
Well, my question was, how did people even know that you put your profile up? It was like an announcement.
I might have publicly posted a link to it on my Facebook page and said.
Okay.
Well, actually, first of all, I remember the most terrifying thing I did was I clicked like on the Ordained Women website, like or the Facebook page, and then I was like, that might show the people's feed, and they're going to know. They click like, and I was so scared, I was like, I have to explain it. So I posted a thing saying, like, I know these women are controversial, but I think that they are really cool in certain ways. I can't remember what I said. And I just kind of said, like, ladies, I think you're great. Let's ask questions and seek for revelation and stuff. And so, first of all, people knew that I had, like, liked Ordained Women, and that was, and apparently they had a talk about it once in Relief Society about, the lesson was on like loving people who are sinners and different or something, and I was in there because I was in primary, but my friend who was teaching about it told me later, because she was afraid she had gotten me in trouble by doing this, she was teaching the Relief Society lesson, and she said, like, Abby Hansen is such a kind, loving human being. She even cares about those ordained women. And, like, they had a discussion. I don't think it was, like, a long discussion, but, like, there was a couple comments of, like, yes, Abby is such a good person because I am awesome. But they were talking about how kind it was to, like, lower myself to the level to say something nice about these women that everyone hates and stuff. And then I put my profile up. And I publicly did it. And so it was, there was no, my bishop who's not on Facebook had a printout, because it ended up being like 150 comments. Like, it was like the never-ending, like, discussion underneath it with people in my Facebook, you know, my friends and family and stuff. mostly calling me to repentance, and a few people that surprised me liking it and stuff, and then removing their likes later when I got in trouble. Like, I noticed, like, and I was okay, I understood, like, oh, your husband's the same counselor in the bishopric, and maybe that was awkward and you took it off, I forgive you. So anyways, that's how everybody found out about it. My bishop had the whole thing printed out, like, by 3 days later, like, in his office, so.
I told my bishop, state president, bishopric, Relief Society president, I think even the state Relief Society president, I emailed them all before I launched the website. So I said, this is what I'm doing. If you have any questions, I want you to come to me first. You'll hear about it online, but I want to be totally transparent about what I'm doing.
So post the coming out of ordainment, and we heard Elder Oaks give this speech in which he quoted J. Reuben Clark, as I recall, and never addressed the question, yes, we came together and prayed about this, and we got the revelation that women should not have the priesthood. Is that still the case, that nobody has ever responded to that question of, yes, we have prayed about this, we've taken it to the Lord, is this just legacy tradition, or is this something that the Lord has really specifically revealed to us?
So the First Presidency issued a statement in which they said, essentially they restated the current policy, which is only males are holders of priesthood office. There's a lot of speculation about what that could mean in the future, and whether or not Elder Oaks is kind of building up, like, you know, there are possibilities in the future, but no one has said, yeah, we prayed about it, and God said no. And so, yeah.
I know, like, we're a church of continuing revelation, so the whole point is that there are many great and important things pertaining to the kingdom of God that will still happen, and it's basically what's happened is the same as if a statement had come out in, like, January of 1978 saying, we only ordain white people, and we only send white people to the temple. It can change overnight. There was no, this will never happen. That's where we're at now.
Yeah, actually, it was.
You repeat the question.
I have more to that question, too. If ordained women was your first exposure to Mormon feminism, because obviously not all Mormon feminists, you know, jumped on the ordained women and women. And if on the other side of that, if you experienced opposition from Mormon feminists regarding ordained women.
Okay. So the first question was that my first introduction to Mormon feminism? And honestly, it was. And I think that's probably unique. I think most women were Mormon feminists and then heard about ordained women through their Mormon feminist circles. My route to it was, like, 10 years ago when I was pregnant with my first son, I randomly picked up Carolyn Pearson's book, Goodbye, I Love You, about her husband who she married who was gay, who died from AIDS, and just she's been an advocate for the LGBT community ever since, if there's anyone in here who doesn't know who she is. And I know, and I've never met her. She's like my hero. I should try to, I gotta leave. Anyways, so tell Carolyn I said hi, and I love her. And anyways, I read that book, and I went from being the most orthodox, I knew everything, nothing could ever change my mind, 25-year-old Mormon girl, to thinking about LGBT issues. And I read every book I could find, and one of my great best friends from BYU came out as gay, and I just read every book I could. So for years, it took me about 5 years of, like, reading every book that I could find about Mormonism and homosexuality, to have this paradigm shift where I thought, you know, I don't think we are, there is more that we don't know about this. I think we're wrong. And it was like, don't hit me with lightning. Like, I think I disagree with our stance on gay marriage. I think we're wrong. And it took me, like, and finally in, like, 2011, I remember saying, like, first time, like, publicly, like, I'm a Mormon stay-at-home mom in Utah County and I support gay marriage. And stuff, like, actually coming out and saying it with, like, vigor and, like, belief and stuff. And that had changed. And it's so hard to shift from being a really orthodox believing Mormon to think anything differently than what your leaders have told you. And I think the fact that, like, I had spent years struggling with that question and come to a place where I was open to disagreeing with current church doctrine, made it so that I literally like never had a problem. I loved being a woman. Like, I was a happy woman in the church. I was pretty sure I was awesome and better than all the guys. But I didn't really like. There were certain things that bothered me, like I was so mad when all the 19-year-old boys in my BYU ward were going on the mission, and I really wanted to go on a mission, and I had read the Book of Mormon more times than them, and they were really dumb, and they got to go on missions, and I had to wait till I was 21. Like, there were things that had bothered me, but I had never put it into words, or like really put it all together. And so anyways, when ordained women came along, I was really frustrated with the church's LGBT stance on everything. LGBT related. And I was kind of had reached a boiling point where I was like, I don't think I can believe in this. I don't think this can't be right. We're wrong. We are so wrong. And that's where I was when ordained women came along and I heard about them and I had never even thought about women in the priesthood. Like, it literally never crossed my mind in my entire life. But whereas it taken me like 5 years of wrestling with another issue, it was like 2 days later, I was like, yep, I'm on board. I have never thought of that, but that's the most brilliant idea ever. That solves so many things that have bugged me in the church that I had never even thought about having an answer to. And so anyway, Mormon feminists, it was my first, and then I found all these Mormon feminist groups and all these different, and then it opened me up to all these podcasts, all this subculture. Like, I had been completely shielded from all of that before. And then I learned everything that everyone here already has known for 20 years. Like, and I came on board in the last few years. And as far as pushback from other Mormon feminists, the second part of your question was saying, have we had pushback? I know that we have. I know that some Mormon feminists, like, I'm aware, like, theoretically, that some Mormon feminists, like, you know, have different routes and different, and I have friends who have kind of come into Mormon feminism because of me, but they take more of the, like, Nyland McBain route, you know, where, like, they say, let's make changes, but ordination's not the answer. I totally respect, like, let's hear everybody's voices and opinions and ideas and come together for a solution and stuff, but I personally haven't had any, like, direct, like, you're a bad Mormon feminist for asking for the priesthood. You might have had more of experience with that, but for me, I haven't had any direct thing like that.
Okay. If that answered your question.
Yeah. Any other? Yeah.
Looking back, now that you have the benefit, both have the benefit of hindsight, you know, would you do anything differently? Or would you still make the choices you've made?
That's my mom, by the way.
throw you a softball question.
My parents are like the most. The question is, would you, looking back with the benefit of hindsight, would you do anything differently? And my parents are like the most supportive parents on the planet. So they come to everything. I would say, if I were to do anything differently, I would say that we should have been, I mean, whatever, you just do what you do when you can, and you just try the best that you can with the information that you have. So this isn't a judgment, but I think that we should have been more bold, if anything. I think the things that we did that inspired the most people were the most bold, and the most, you know, confrontational, and the most authentic. And so I think, I don't know, I could look back at a million things, but again, we did what we did the best we could with the information that we had at the time. And so I think we did a great job. I think the thing that I think is so interesting is people are like, yeah, well, you didn't get the priesthood, so, like, it didn't work. that is fascinating to me, because that has never been the point. The point of the entire exercise is to stand up for yourself and to speak the truth and to acknowledge that you see reality, which is that men and women are not equal in the church, and to be able to say that publicly. So the outcome of ordaining women does not depend on the decisions that men in Salt Lake City who are 90 years old make. To me, it never depended on that. And so it was so interesting to me. Like, we had a specific ask, and as an activist group, I think we were, like, extremely and very quickly organized. But it, to me, the outcome never depended on them.
I was thinking, while you're answering,
if I would change anything.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Honestly, I don't think I would. Like, if I knew everything I knew now and could start over again, it would be much smoother road, because I'd know what to avoid and what, you know, not to say to upset you know, the bishop or whatever, you know, specifically. I would have, like, a better, but at the same time, I couldn't know everything I know now if I hadn't gone through the last 3 years' journey. So I wouldn't change anything, honestly. I mean, I wish I had, could have avoided some of the scream crying in the parking lot of Walmart occasionally, but you know what? I wouldn't have gotten here where I am without my, the things that I went through. So I don't think I would change it. I'm glad that it happened. I'm glad I made Kate. She's awesome.
I would say one more thing. I think it was very, like, rabble, like, scrappy and, like, just doing, like I said, we're, like, reaching out to our friends and trying to figure out how to respond and how do I write a press release? I don't know. Like, figuring out all these things. And when you've never been in a group of Mormon women who have decision-making power before, like, I've never been in that situation where it's only women. And it was awesome. And we would, like, fight about things for, like, 7 hours on our conference calls. Because we were all women who had very strong opinions about everything that we did. And I'm sure that's how it still is. I'm not on the board. But I think one thing we could have done, and again, at the time, it was just like, it blew up, and it was an inundation of small decisions that you made. I think we could have done a better job at being more inclusive. And by that, I specifically mean in regards to race and, like, considering women of color and people who don't live in the U.S. as part of our movement. And so, I don't, you know, you can think back about a million things that you could have done differently with that regard, but I think I personally and us as leaders could have been taken a step back and been more thoughtful about how to approach certain topics. I think for another one concrete example is we compared it often to the 1978 revelation that black men got the priesthood. And I think a lot of the ways that we talked about that were insensitive to the experience of Mormon women of color. So that's one thing that I think really, really we could have done differently.
One more. This gentleman in the purple.
Question for Abby. When you were interacting with your bishop, did you feel that was all that was going on? Was the bishop, was he under other kinds of, in a different circumstance and getting pressure from other?
Sure. The question was, when I was interacting with my bishop, my former bishop, did I feel like it was just the bishop doing it, or if he was getting, I think you're saying, like, direction from above. Here's what I think happened. My bishop is a very, my former bishop is a very kind man, very, very Orthodox, sheltered, does not use the internet other than LDS.org. Like, literally, I'm not joking, does not know how the internet works, which led to part of the problem. He didn't understand what was going on. He didn't know what to do, so he went and talked to my state president, who said, well, research this group and find out what's going on. He didn't know how to use the internet, so he got very confused, like, finding things that had nothing to do with us and stuff. And then he went back to the state president and told the state president, this is what I found out, not even talking to me, who could have cleared it all up. And the two of them, in a vacuum, started freaking out and panicking, and they were like, this is Abby, she's in the primary presidency, and everybody knows her, and she's on this, and we can't just let this stand and stuff. And so the two of them started freaking out. My bishop, and I had our area authority at the time, and my bishop ended up in a temple session together. Like, I don't know if it was like some cosmic joke on me, but my bishop was so excited to run up in the celestial room to talk to our area authority and said, you know, we've never contacted the area authority in 5 years of being bishop, but this is what's going on. There's a girl in my ward who has an ordained woman profile. And the area authority said, I guess, you know, tell her to be careful because she is this close to losing her temple recommend. And he quoted that to me, and I wanted to say, well, this close is not take away her temple recommend, release her from our callings, ban her from visiting teaching, call a disciplinary council. Those are very different things. There's this much space left. I can still have a recommend, but this, and that's not how he interpreted it. He interpreted it as, I'm doing the right thing. I need to stop her because she will spread. So I think, so we did actually have some interaction with the area authority. And then later on, when my new bishop got called, my new bishop, who is my current bishop, said he prayed about it and felt very strongly inspired that it had been a mistake, that he needed to reverse all of the discipline, that he needed to change it back. He went to my state president as a brand new bishop, and I'm so grateful to my current bishop for this because I realize how scary this is as a brand new bishop. Went to the state president in his very first meeting and said, I think you and the old bishop made a mistake. I think we need to reverse all this. My state president said, no. My bishop went back the second month to his meeting with the state president, said, I've been praying about this. I still think this is wrong and we need to reverse it. And the second time my stake present said, okay, but I don't think we should give her tempo recommend back, but you can give her a call. And that's when I got Cub Scouts and visiting teaching and camp and stuff. And at that point, and then that spring, my bishop really wanted me to get my tempo recommend back, and he said he would sign my tempo recommend. And then the stake president said, okay, I would sign her tempo recommend, but, and his quote was, my hands are tied. The area authorities and stuff, like the people above me, will not let anyone who has an ordained woman profile put have a temple recommend. And those are the quotes, my hands are tied. So I was like, wait, I have a bishop and a stake president who will both sign my temple recommend, and I still can't have one? And I was just at that point, just threw up my hands and was like, I'm giving up the temple. I'm just letting that go. And it was 2 weeks after that that Kate's discipline hit the news, and the church made all these statements saying, we never interact with local leadership, you know? And I was like, so at that point, I was like, I think I have a really dang good case if I want my recommend back to go in and be like, you said you'd sign it. My bishop wants to sign it. They said they never, look, I have a press release from the church saying they don't interfere. Give me my tempo recommend. Darn it. I wouldn't swear because it would be a tempo recommend interview. Anyways, but at that point, I felt I'd already put a piece saying, I am letting that part of my life go. Like, I'm letting it go. So anyways, there you go. That was our interaction. I think it's mostly local leaders being a little nuts.
I'll just throw in really quickly that I think the saliency of the movement is people like Abby. And so people like me, who don't have kids, who have advanced degrees, who blah, 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 like it's a little bit easier to demonize us in Mormonism. And so I think, but when people like Abby start joining the movement, that's when they start getting really, really nervous. And so I think, I don't know, you know, I don't speculate about who's told who to do what. I have no, I'm not deluded to think that the church, you know, leaders, higher leaders obviously had something to do with my excommunication, but I don't really care, like, the back workings of who said what. I just think it got to a point where they said, it's not just going to be these fringe people. It's not just going to be Mormon feminists. I actually think a lot of people found Mormon feminism because of ordained women. We had people, because it was making such news, like, because it was getting in the news so much, people were sending in profiles who'd never been on FMH, who'd never heard of Sunstone, who'd never, you know, they're just some, like, currently serving bishop living in Ohio who hears about ordained women and sends in a profile. So when it started reaching those kinds of people is when they said, like, we've really got a problem. Like, this is a much more salient, much more appealing point of view than we thought. And it's not just going to be these fringe people. And that's when they decided, I think, that they need to start sending discipline down the pipe. So I think they disciplined me as a dog whistle to everyone else, like, stop doing what you're doing because we're going to punish people. And then they haven't had to discipline anyone else in a similar way since. But people continue to get these informal types of discipline to this day.
And I assume that you are the only one who has been
I'm the only one who's been excommunicated.
That's a great problem for the brethren.
In connection with ordained women, which is at this point, I don't even know, 700 profiles. So there are hundreds of people who are officially affiliated with the group, and obviously hundreds and thousands more who agree. But I'm the only one who's been formally disciplined.
Well, we want to thank Kate and Abby for their time.